As we've mentioned already this month, and we'll continue to mention, September is the month that we at the Begal Drive congregation have set aside. We focus on Bible school emphasis and the importance not only of attending Bible school, but we particularly emphasize that aspect, but the importance of gathering with God's people for the express purpose of learning of Him and of gathering the benefits that come from being among His saints and being indeed in His Word. As the deer panteth for the water has been our theme this month. The reason this makes such an appropriate theme is because the Psalm number 42, begins with the words, "As the hart panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God." The desire of a thirsty deer looking for streams ought to be the desire we have for God and for being in His house, as that psalm will later go on to say. We've mentioned how there are various aspects of a gathering that we could discuss, reasons to gather together, reasons to be in Bible class, reasons to assemble to worship, reasons to come to God. One, there's the command. There's the ought to do it. The Hebrews writer spoke of, let us not neglect or forsake the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is. Now, we must emphasize that passage involves much more than the gathering of the saints, but it certainly includes that. And if I'm forsaking the body of Christians, then I'm certainly forsaking the assembling and the assembly, if you will. No, there's the command, and if I neglect, if I forsake when I could be there, that's sin. There's also the priority. Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness." I've got to ask, am I really putting God first when I'm not gathering with His people on the Lord's day? Then there's also the desire. And that's where we focused as we looked at Psalm 42, that desire to worship. Peter said, "As newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the Word, that you may grow thereby," 1 Peter 2:2. Jesus said, "Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy soul, with all thy mind," Matthew 22:37. If we think about this idea of desire, that ought to be the strongest motivation. In looking at this topic this month, we've already noted the idea of the desire to be here. When we looked at Psalm 42, we emphasized the fact that Psalms 42 and 43 were from the perspective of one who is inhibited from being in God's house, prevented from gathering with God's people. There's an obstacle keeping him from being where he wants to be. Have you ever been there? Have you ever had a legitimate handicap preventing you from being able to meet with the saints? If you've ever been there, then you know how strong that desire is. It's a desire that we may take for granted whenever we're able to be here and not have to think a second thought about our hell. Last week we looked at the not just the desire, but actually being there. We looked at reasons or incentives. We looked at Psalm 122:1. "I was happy when they said unto me," or "glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord." We looked at reasons to be glad to gather. Today we want to look at another idea. We want to look at the idea of, well, if I've understood truly being glad to assemble with the house of the Lord, and I understand that God's house is the church, 1 Timothy 3:15, you need to know how you ought to behave yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. Or if we go to Ephesians 1 and we hear Paul talking to the church, and Ephesians 2, and he emphasizes you're the temple of God. God dwells in you. All these ideas, I understand. When we talk about the house of God today, we're talking about the Lord's church, the people that Christ has saved. If I'm truly glad to be among that number, to be with them, will it only show when I'm there? Let me think of it a different way. When we looked at Psalm 22 last week, an invitation was extended to the psalmist. Come, let's go to the house of the Lord. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go unto the house of the Lord. If we step back from Psalm 22 and just ask the hypothetical, what if the roles were reversed? Suppose the psalmist is the one inviting others. Would they see the gladness in him extended in his invitation? I was glad when they said unto me, let us go unto the house of the Lord. What do people see in you when you mention to them, we'd love to have you worship with us? We'd love to invite you to come to Bible class. Do they see gladness? Do they see trepidation? Do they see fear? Today, let's consider not just the desire to be here in a Bible class and worship, not just the gladness. Let's see if that gladness is real as we consider the invitation. Because, well, if I don't really enjoy doing something, chances are I'm not going to be very prone to inviting others to participate. I mean, when's the last time you said to someone, hey, let's go get root canals together? I wonder if that's about the approach some folks have when it comes to the church. If I'm just sitting, not involved, if I'm there because I have to be there, but not because I want to be there, how does that come across whenever I extend that obligatory invitation because I've got to make sure I punch a certain number of invitations over the course of the year to show God I'm trying to evangelize? Do I really want to be there? Because if I don't, then the people that I try to reach are going to see it. It'll be half-hearted. I would really love if you'd come visit with us at the church on Sunday. Or is it, love for you to worship with us? I want to extend an invitation to you. Won't you be there? When I'm sincere about it, it shows. Are we inviting people to come and sit? Or are we inviting people to come and worship? If you will open to Psalm 66. Now, as we've noted, the house of God today is not the house of God that was described in the Psalms. The house of God described in the Psalms was the temple or the tabernacle, depending on what time frame you're examining. The house of God today is the church. Nevertheless, although the nature of the house has changed, the fervor for being there has not. And the very attitudes that we see conveyed in the Psalms ought to be present in our hearts. Let's take a look at Psalm 66. We'll read through it, and then we'll draw some thoughts about the invitation that's extended from the psalmist. And as we read through it, since your mind is able to think five times faster than I can speak, as we read through it, think as we go through on two planes. One, what's this showing about the way the psalmist acted when he worshiped, when he was gathered with God's people, when he was in God's house? But two, what's this showing about the way he acted when he extended the invitation to gather? Psalm 66, we begin in verse 1, make a joyful noise unto God, all ye lands. Sing forth the honor of his name. Make his praise glorious. Say unto him, how terrible art thou in thy works. Through the greatness of thy power shall all the enemies submit themselves unto thee. All the earth shall worship thee and shall sing to thee. They shall sing to thy name, Selah. Selah, an emphasis, kind of the idea of an amen, but also a musical breaking point. We move on to verse 5. Come and see the works of the Lord. He is terrible in his doings toward the children of men. For he turned the sea into dry land. They went through the floods, literally the river, on foot. There did we rejoice in him. He ruleth by his power forever. His eyes behold all nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. Selah. We come to verse 8. Bless our God, ye people, and make the voice of his praise to be heard, which holdeth our soul in life, which suffereth not our feet to be moved. For thou, O God, hath proved us. Thou hast tried us as silver is tried. Thou broughtest us into the net. Thou hast laid affliction upon our loins. Thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. I will go into thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay thee my vows, which my lips have uttered, and my mouth hath spoken when I was in trouble. I will offer the burnt sacrifices with fatlings, with the incense of rams. I will offer bullocks with goats. Selah. Verse 16, come and hear, all ye that fear the Lord, and I will declare what he hath done for my soul. I cried unto him with my mouth. He was extolled with my tongue. If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me, but verily God hath heard me. He attended unto the voice of my prayer. Blessed be God, who hath not turned away my prayer, nor his mercy from me. Can you hear his attitude? I want to worship with that fellow. I want that fellow to be the one to come to me and say, hey, we've got a gospel meeting this week. You'll be glad if you're there. It's going to be a joyous occasion. Let's go through this psalm again. And let's look at four ideas that stand out in this invitation that he extends, not only to the world, to the lost, to those that are away, but keep in mind at one point he's also saying, oh, bless our God, ye people. He's speaking both to the lost and to those that are God's. Look at four invitations. First, come and sing. Make a joyful noise unto God, he says. Sing forth the honor of his name. There's a reason that I get excited about worship. It's because I get to sing honor to the name of God. I can honor his name with the various songs that we sing, regardless of the tempo. I can honor his name by declaring who he is. One's name is that person's identity. Psalm 66:2 says, sing forth the honor of his name and make his praise glorious. You know, there is nothing wrong with a slow tempo song, but we need to be careful with them, because too often we turn the slow tempo songs into something that just drag down our souls. Have you ever met with a congregation and you started hearing that song, tempted and tried where? Brethren, I'm not speaking against that song, but the way it's sung more often than not, by the time we get through, I am thinking farther along, maybe we will understand why. Are we truly trying to honor his name when we sing? Do we think about the name of the one to whom we sing? We get to sing to his honor. And that's another thought to keep in mind. Let's stop looking at it as obligatory, although when we come together to study of God in Bible class, when we come together to worship God in the worship period, indeed, we ought to be there. But instead of looking at it as obligation, we get to, let's see it as opportunity. We get to sing to his honor, the honor of his name. His name is who he is. We get to sing to his power, of his greatness. Say unto him, the psalmist says, well, what if I don't know what to sing? Why don't you say unto God, how terrible art thou and thy works? The word translated terrible in the King James Version is translated awesome in the English Standard. I know, we hear the word awesome describing all kinds of things. Awesome has become not so awesome because it's used in such an awesome amount of instances. Well, when we're talking about God, awesome is awe-inspiring. How awesome. How great. How mighty. How exalted. How awesome art thou in thy works. By the greatness of thy power, thou shalt cause the enemies to submit themselves to thee. We get to sing of how great God is, how great thou art. There is a God, he is alive. In him we live and we survive. From dust our God created man, he's our God. The great I am. We get to sing to his honor. We get to sing of his greatness. It reminds us of who our God is. And I don't want to be selfish with that. The more people with whom I get to share that, the more I'm reminded of how great he is. We get to sing to his honor. We get to sing of his greatness. We get to sing to him. Think of the statement made in verse 4. All the earth shall worship thee. And indeed, that's God's desire. He wants all of those who are made in his image truly to live in his image and to worship him. But it's not just about all the earth shall worship thee, they shall sing to thee. God's our audience. You ever been to a concert, whatever the genre of music? The audience is the group that listens. If you can ever think of yourself as being on stage before God, it's when you offer unto him the sacrifice of praise, the fruit of your lips, giving thanks to his name. He's your audience. Sing to him. He's listening, hearing your voice. And he doesn't care if you can carry a tune. He does care if your heart can carry a thought. And stay focused on him. Oh, come and sing. Do we have the fervor the psalmist had when we think about it? But it's not just about the singing. Come and see. This is even more powerful. Indeed, singing should be an outpouring of our gratitude and our attitude toward God. But I need something to spawn that attitude. I need something to cause me to realize his greatness. So the psalmist says, come and see. Come look at the evidence. Come think about what he's done. Come and see the works of God. He's terrible, awesome, in his doings toward the children of men. God has showed how awesome he is. He's showed how great he is. Think about what he has done. Psalm 65, 6. He turned the sea into dry land. It doesn't take a Bible scholar to know the passage in reference. When God led them out of Egypt in the book of Exodus, he parted the waters for Israel to pass, and then he closed the waters upon Pharaoh's armies. They walked through on dry land. Not only did God part the waters for them as they exited Egypt, showing his glory. Now keep in mind, God had already manifested his power in 10 plagues upon Egypt, culminating in the death of the firstborn. But it wasn't until he manifested his power by parting the waters, moving Israel through and closing them upon the Egyptians, that they had freedom. He's shown how powerful he is. Not only when Moses was leading them out of Egypt, but when Joshua was leading them into the promised land, because the word translated flood in the King James Version here in verse 6, when the psalmist says, they walked through the flood on foot, the word's literally river. There are two historical occasions mentioned in the verse. You want to see how good God is? Think back to when the people came out of Egypt. And think to when they entered the promised land. God stopped the river of Jordan as they walked through as a nation on dry land. And Jordan floods its banks at harvest time. I know. There are those scholars that say, well, we've not seen anything to lead us to believe that the Hebrews are actually in Egypt. Liars. I know. Well, we don't think the Hebrews actually entered the promised land around 1400 BC. We think it was either a century and a half earlier, or, and we've discussed that in earlier topics. But there's more evidence for God's greatness. Think about Romans 1:20. The Apostle Paul made the statement, "The invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." Friends, God's greatness is not only manifested in leading Israel out of Egypt and into the promised land. His greatness is manifested if we will open our eyes and look at the world around us. Design demands a designer. If we were simply to go to the most fundamental building block of life, the protein, one strand of DNA, one molecule of your being, if you will, is so precisely put together with just four proteins, adenine, guanine, thymine, cytosine, in such a precise order that for that to happen by chance would require one out of so many zeros behind it that there's not enough space in the universe to hold all the proteins for it to come to pass in one probability session. In other words, the likelihood of life existing simply based on proteins is so slim that it had to be put together with intelligence. And that's just the fundamental building block of life. That's not even talking about the heavens and how they declare the glory of God, with the earth on its perfect tilt and the perfect distance from the sun, the perfect distance from the moon, the perfect speed and the perfect path through our solar system so that we don't go plummeting into the sun or get too far away so that we freeze. If we will step back and look at the creation around us, there's evidence of God. Come and see. The sad thing is that when I'm out there in the world, if I've not already learned of this evidence, if it's not already been brought to my attention, how sad it is that I just look right past it. Come and see what God has done, the psalmist says. We can see what he's done in the lives of people. We can see what he's done simply in putting us here. Come and see what God has done, but not only that, verse 7, the statement is made, he ruleth by his power forever. Ruleth. That's a current action happening right now. Not only did God in his power bring Israel out of Egypt and bring this people into the promised land, this people of whom God would say in Deuteronomy 7, I didn't choose you because you were greater or more in number than all nations, because you're puny and you're tiny, but I chose you because I loved you, because I made a promise to your fathers. When we think about what God has done, he brought this puny, tiny nation into a promised land and drove out the nations greater than they that were there in their, before them. But look at what he's doing. He ruleth all nations. He doesn't just rule Israel. It's just that Israel is really the only nation that has them as their theocrat, as their king. They're the only ones that, if they're doing what they're supposed to do, truly submit to him. He still rules all nations today. It's just that the only nation that really submits to him doesn't have a capital here on earth. It's a holy nation, a peculiar people, a royal priesthood, according to 1 Peter 2:9. The only nation that submits itself to God today is this church, the people that gather on his day to offer praise to his name. Come and see. Don't just see what he has done and the evidence that he's left. See what he's doing. He didn't set the world in motion and say, good luck, y'all. See you in a bit. He's involved. He cares. He's ruling and he's looking. His eyes behold all nations. He ruleth by his power forever. His eyes behold all nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. There's an application to be made here. God is in authority. God has the power. He's omniscient. He's also omnipotent, rather. He's also omniscient. He sees everything. His eyes behold all nations. He's over all. He sees all. So stop thinking you can rise up and exalt yourself. Look at what he has done. But look at what God's doing. Do you ever stop and look at what God's doing in your life? Do you ever look at where you've been, where you are now, and where, Lord willing, you're going? Look at what He will do. Not only is a statement made that He ruleth all nations, but there is a time stamp on it. He is currently ruling all nations, and how long is He going to do that? Psalm 66:7. Forever. You ever see that little movie, The Sandlot? Forever. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, well, you're just out of the loop. Forever. Forever. It's not going to stop. There's no expiration date on the authority of God. The same power that led a ragtag family through the Red Sea. The same power that turned them into an army and brought them into the promised land. The same power that has ruled over all nations and exalted and brought them down to His good pleasure. That same power rules forever. Come and see. Look at the evidence, and you'll see reason to come and sing. Come and see. Come and sing. But then there's another thought. Come and offer. We pick up at verse 8. The statement is made, bless our God, ye people. Bless God, thank Him. Give gratitude. Now, it's interesting that he carries this idea of bless God. Give Him praise. Give Him gratitude. And look what he says next. He says, now make the voice of His praise to be heard. Let everyone hear you praise God. Let it be known how much you're praising Him. He has held our soul in life. He's kept us alive. He's held our soul in this dimension, this area, this realm of life. And He suffers not our feet to be moved. He's taking care of us, the psalmist says. What's so interesting about that are the words that follow. For Thou, O God, hast proved us. Thou hast tried us as silver is tried. God, you put us through the fire. You put us in the furnace and the refining pot just as silver is tried. God, you let us face hardship so as to remove the dross, the impurities. You let us face difficulty. You put us into the net. You cast affliction upon our loins. God, you threw trouble in our laps. You caused us to carry heavy burdens. You ever felt that way? The way Job wanted to say, Why? Why are you doing this to me? The psalmist felt this way. The same one that is saying, come and sing. Come and see. He looks at a period in his life. He felt like he was being tried. Put through the ringer. Thrown into the net and dragged. He felt as though God had laid affliction upon his loins. He says, Thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through the fire and through water. We felt like we were going to burn up. Then we felt like we were drowning. We felt like we were going to die in all sorts of ways. But then, the end of verse 12, but Thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. God, you let us go through difficulty, but you led us through it. And you brought us out better, stronger. Our lives are richer because of it. Now notice what's said. Question, have you ever been there? Have you ever been in those shoes? Have you ever been the one who you've been away from God? You know, maybe that's who you are right now. Maybe you're here today for that very purpose because you've been away from God and something happened in life. You said, God, if you'll get me through this, I'll come home. God, if you'll just help me with this, please just... The story is told of a preacher who was on an airplane, and as the aircraft descended, they were coming in on final approach. Apparently they hit a large amount of turbulence. Everyone was worried, and the person sitting right next to this preacher said, God, I know I've not worshipped you in a long time, but if you'll get me through this, I'll give you everything that I have. Well, the plane landed, and the preacher, being opportunistic, as most are, looked at the man and said, "You know, I heard that prayer you uttered. I'm a preacher. I'd like to help you with that." The man said, "Well, you heard me praying when we were in the turbulence. You didn't hear my quiet prayer after it all ended. I told God that if I'm ever in that situation again, I'll definitely give him all that I have." Wait a minute, you just made a promise. Yeah, have you ever been that person? "God, if you get me out of this, I'm out of it. Now I'm going to forget." Hear the psalmist. "I felt like I was on fire, refining as silver. We went through the fire, felt like I was drowning. We went through water, felt like I was in the net. Thou hast made men to ride over our heads. I was as low as I could go. Felt like I was being trampled. But you brought us out to a wealthy place." Have you ever come out on the other side of adversity having made a promise to God? This psalmist had, and now hear his words. "I will go to thy house." God's house today is the church, right? "I will go to thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay thee my vows." I've made a promise. How do we know he made a promise? Because the next verse says, concerning those offerings and those vows, "which my lips have uttered and my mouth hath spoken when I was in trouble. God, I'm going to offer you what I promised." We get to offer what's been promised to God. God gives us the opportunity to give to Him what we've promised Him. What have you promised Him? You promised your children to God? When that baby was on the way, were you so glad that you said, "God, this child belongs to you. Just help me to make this boy or to make this girl to come to know you"? Did you make that promise? Are you keeping it? Maybe in a time of difficulty, you made the promise to give yourself to God. Have you ever made such a promise? Are you keeping it? We get to offer God what we've promised. Maybe it's monetary. Maybe it's me. We not only get to offer Him what we promise, but think about how it proceeds. Psalm 66:15, after the psalmist says, "I will pay what I vowed, which my lips have uttered and my mouth hath spoken when I was in trouble," he then goes on to say, "I will offer the burnt sacrifices of fatlings," a general offering offered by the people, fatlings of lambs and bulls. But he says, "I will offer the sacrifice of fatlings with the incense of rams." Now, the incense of rams would be an offering given by the nation as a people, or by a priest, or by a prince. We've got multiple offerings taking place here. "I will offer thee fatlings with the incense of rams. I will offer bullocks," another general offering from a person or the people, "with goats." Another offering from a prince or one in authority or from the people as a group. The psalmist is not only talking about, "God, I'll worship you by myself. Boy, I will sing praises to you," because, hey, everyone knows a solo sounds better, right? "God, I will give you everything I promised, but don't make me get around those Christian people. They get on my..." The psalmist says, "I'm going to offer to God with God's people. If what I have to offer God, I'm not offering with His people, then I'm not giving it to God." God has always desired for His people to be together. We get to offer what we've promised. We get to offer with God's people, and we get to offer what's proper. We don't have to bring bulls and goats. I've worked in a meat department before. I don't want to have to wear that red apron again. But if we were offering bulls and goats here, I know how I'd be dressed. No, the only sacrifice that we're to make, we offer the sacrifice of praise, the fruit of our lips, as we've discussed, Hebrews 13:15. But think about Romans 12:1. "I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of Christ, that ye offer your bodies a living sacrifice, or yourselves a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. What does God want us to offer to Him? Just ourselves. Oh yes, we give of our means and return unto Him as He's prospered us, 1 Corinthians 16:2. We're to give cheerfully, 2 Corinthians 9:7. God loveth a cheerful giver. But all of that is peripheral when we've truly given ourselves to God, which is your reasonable sacrifice. It's just reasonable. What's He given for me? Well, He's given me life. He's given me a family. He's given me health. He's given me food. He's given me clothing. He's given me a roof over my head. He's given me the freedom that I enjoy in this nation wherein I dwell. He's given me the hope of eternal life despite the rottenness of sin. He's given His Son. What's God given me? I can answer that in one word. Everything. James said every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, James 1:17. Everything I have is from God. So what does He deserve? We can answer that in one word too. Can you say it with me? Everything. Including me. Come and sing. Come and see. Come and offer. Come and hear. The statement is made in verse 16. Come and hear. All ye that fear the Lord, you that want to know Him, you that respect Him, you that have an appreciation and an awe for Him, ye that fear the Lord, come and hear. And I'll tell you what He's done for my soul. Notice how personal this gets. Now, thus far, it's been a matter of what God has done for His people and offerings being given to God by the people. But now the psalmist makes it personal. He's already supplied evidence for how great God is and for the fact that God is. The psalmist is not using as his source of evangelism his own personal testimony and story. Hey, let me stand up here and tell you what God's done for me. He's already declared how powerful God is. The need to honor His name. He's already declared the necessity of worship. But now, it really sounds like the psalmist is having Bible class after the worship service. Come and hear. Listen. You've seen the proof. You've seen the evidence. But let's do some learning. And let's make it on a one-on-one personal basis. I cried unto Him with my mouth. He was extolled with my tongue. If I regard iniquity in my heart, God will not hear me. It's a shame that that's the only verse we remember out of this entire chapter. But notice the point that he makes. We get to hear God. We get to hear about what God has done for all of mankind, but also for individuals. Think about the way Paul put it. He loved me and gave himself for me, Galatians 2:20. Here's a setting where the psalmist, having already declared the glory, the power, the evidence, the reality of God, makes God personal. He cares. He's speaking. He's involved in your life. Hear about God. Hear God. But not only that, not only is it a matter of me listening, and if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. You know, that runs awfully parallel to the words of Proverbs 28:9, where the wise man would say that he that turneth his ear from the hearing of the law, even his prayer shall be abomination. Oh, if I tell God, la la, I'm not listening, la 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 la, God says, I'm not listening to you either. You living like that? How many people pray every day, but you only open your Bible on Sundays and maybe Wednesdays? You expect God to hear you when you're not listening to Him. If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me, but verily God hath heard me, the psalmist says. Not only is it a matter of hear God, but God hears. He heard my voice. He attended unto the voice of my prayer. God listened. Blessed be God. He's not turned away my prayer. nor his mercy from me. Hone in on one more word. Mercy. The Hebrew word is chesed, often translated loving kindness or tender mercies in other translations. The idea, not just mercy and withholding punishment due. No, it's closely connected to the idea of a family love. A love that's steadfast. It's sometimes translated steadfast love. It's a love that endures. God's not taking his love away. He loves me. Why does he hear? Because he cares. Because he loves me. Have you invited anyone to worship lately? Do you want to tell them, come, let's sing. Come, let's see what God's done. Come, let's hear of his mightiness and his greatness, and let's offer him what he deserves, which is us. There was a man that said, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, Matthew 11:28. His name was Jesus. This is the same one that would say, no man cometh unto the Father but by me, John 14:6. Let me ask you a question. Have you come to God? Do you belong to him? Are you his people? Have you been washed in the blood of Christ? Having heard the gospel and believed it, repented of sins, confessed his sweet name, why tarriest thou? Arise, be baptized, wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord, Acts 22:16. If you're here today, and your invitation to worship has been come and sit instead of come and see. Come and see. Come and offer. Come and hear. If your heart's not been in it, are you ready to make things right? If you need to return to the Lord this morning, why not come forward while we stand together? Come while we sing.